Now, we settle into a witty banter that is insightful, but also comically aloof.
So, Pete, that is...
Hey, brother.
That is the little clip that I tagged on to the beginning of the last episode, after the fact.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't give it a re-listen. I know that's kind of my thing. I'm supposed to listen for that, but I apologize.
You know, back when I was young and sexy. Back when you cared about this marriage. And you would go back and play things. You'd be like, remember it.
I already have that two-year itch.
Remember at 13:17 in the episode when you said that funny thing? That was funny.
I love you.
Yeah. God, I long for those days. Now I'm just like, hey, Pete, can you edit that part where we dropped the F-bomb and then mentioned, like, killing a senator on air? And
you're like, yeah.
You put out your cigarette. You're like, I'll get to it when I get to it. You fat,
getting
hairy,
too old
pig.
For
So, this is Papa's Basement. I am your host, John Papagiorgio. I'm joined in studio today by Pete Whitaker. He is a handsome, alive man.
That is the first time you've said that.
What?
Pete Whitaker.
Pete Whitaker? Oh, it's his.
Because we're in the
bad
presence
influence,
of,
yeah,
of our guest.
Actually,
you
Pete
always
maybe.
Say Pete Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, you're Pete Maybe.
All right, secret's out.
Yeah.
I have two last names.
Doesn't Pete Whitaker sound like the name? I mentioned this in your show.
Yeah.
It sounds like the name of an astronaut.
It sounds a lot cooler than Maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I kind of just pulled out of my ass, so.
Pete Maybe sounds, well, it doesn't sound real. We can start with that.
Yeah.
I don't really believe you were baptized as Peter Maybe. Yeah.
I think it sounds like a luchador.
Pete Maybe?
Yeah.
Do you know a lot of
Pedro
Spanish
Maybe?
People named Maybe?
No.
There you go. Yeah.
Maybeo.
You're like, my name is Saul Rubinstein. It makes me sound Finnish.
Right.
I mean,
it's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. We have in studio today a real treat for the two of us and a real treat for you guys at home. Our improv teacher, our friend, guru, the guy that got us into the cult. It really is the cult of improv. Sean Westfall.
Thank you again. It's an honor once again to be here. Please, from here on out, call me Sean Maybe. Okay, just call
Sean
me
Sean Maybe. All right.
Just call me. Don't use my
I want to be John Whitaker.
Okay.
All right. This all works.
No, we can do the Ramones thing. You're Sean Maybe. I'm John Maybe. But he stays Pete Whitaker.
Pete Whitaker.
Show site in papasbasement.com. Every episode we've ever done is there. We're on YouTube. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Find all of that. But you can all those links in papasbasement.com because some dusty old bitch will not relinquish papasbasement.com.
Oh, I wish I could remember her name right now because I don't mind calling her out.
Her name is Dio Bitch.
Yeah, she won't relinquish papasbasement.com. Nothing has ever happened to that site ever since she has bought it, but she renews it every year just in spite of us because we have reached out to her. And she does not care.
So there's no content on the site. There's
nothing.
It just says this URL is owned by
nothing.
Dusty bitch.
Right? Yeah.
Dusty old. Like at this point, if I ever met her, I'd expect her to like pull off her face Scooby-Doo style. And she's like, I'm actually a woman whose child you ran over when you were drunk at age 16.
There's got to be a loophole so we can get that. So that she could say like, and I would have gotten away with it if it hadn't been for you meddling kids. But you can find that all on In Papa's Basement. There's all the links are up there. But also, guys, if you're listening now, listen live, too, because we do have an interaction via the YouTube chat.
Yeah.
So, like, you guys can actually be in the show if you are interested.
Yeah, Pete Whitaker, maybe, is there to ask you ASL pick. If you're on YouTube.com/Papa's Basement, he will ask all of that and ask for your location. And then
I will come there.
Yeah, exactly, and see if he can make his bone jive. That's how he puts it. He's an old jazz
that's
man.
How I treat my fans.
That's how he says sex.
Bone jive?
Bone jive.
Did you learn that from that movie?
Yeah,
after porn ends?
After porn ends, too. I might have from the great John Keyes, the black contemporary of John Holmes.
He was amazing.
Oh, God. I will, before we really take you down a dark road, let's just say it.
We're already getting into porn.
Sean runs, co-owns with his lovely wife, the Unified Scene Theater in D.C. Please go out there and see performances. I hop out at intermission and say, like, what? I have the little 10-minute things, right, during a lot of the shows.
That's exactly what you're. In fact, we should plug that there's a show tonight.
There is a show tonight.
If you happen to be in the Bloomingdale neighborhood of Washington, D.C., stop by. Some good improv going on tonight.
Who's performing tonight?
So we have two troops. The first one is called Burgos McElveen.
What?
Burgos McElveen.
Well, was that the evil painting in Ghostbusters 2?
That's exactly who they're named after. It's actually two really talented guys, Michael Burgos and Reeves McElveen.
Don't get where the name came from. Yeah,
it's a mystery, isn't it? It's clouded in obscurity. But they're doing a duo, and then following that is our intermission show, a brief sort of 10-minute soiree into we get to see some of the students that we have here, mm-hmm. some of our former students and current students performing. And then following that is a troupe called the Female Accent, and they're a long-form troupe that does an interesting format. Looking forward to it. It's going to be some good quality improv here at our theater.
Nice. So,
cool.
Yep. And this is John saying this, not Sean. So if you want to send your hate mail my way, I hear female accent and all I can think is the up talking.
Yeah, the up speaking.
God damn. Is there anything worse on NPR where 90% of the female contributors talk like this?
So I tell a story, and I've told this story on various storytelling stages around D.C., mm-hmm. but I went on a date with a woman like 10 years ago,
right.
And she was really into – she had spent a lot of time in the New Age section of the bookstore, okay. right? So she was really into reflexology and Wiccanism and healing powers of crystals and stuff like that, mm-hmm. right? And I thought it was like – initially thought it was kind of like a put-on. But I showed up on the date, and there was not a Machiavellian bone in this woman's body. She was really into it. She believed all this stuff. But to hammer home just how sincere she was, yep, she was an upspeaker.
Oh, no.
So, Sean, your aura is green.
You need to align your chakras.
And that's good. And I can align your chakras. So,
oh, God.
Yeah.
Is that covered under the new healthcare reform? Crystals?
Yes, yeah. It is.
Yes,
I could see that, actually.
Yeah
instead of like,
crystals now.
Instead of covering open heart surgery, here's a crystal, go suck on it. Pete, did you want to... we all have a lot that we...
You want to ask me how I'm doing?
Yeah, you know, that's the majority of the show. We start off, we're like, hey, what happened? What was done to you this week? Not what you achieved.
Who touched you?
Yeah, exactly. Who squatted and pooped?
Well, unlike most days or like when I'm at work, I'm not going to lie. I'm not doing well this week.
No.
What's going on, Pete?
No.
Well, so Friday I was having electrical issues. I called out my electrician to come out to my old house.
A euphemism for not getting it up? Or?
No, that still works most of the time.
All right.
And I had my electrician come out, and he came and he looked at my my meter in the back of my house. I was getting 220. This goes over some people's head, but I was getting 220 into the meter, 120 into the house.
No, this is an electrician's podcast.
Exactly. So only half my house was running. Uh-huh. My stove would only get warm. It wouldn't actually heat.
It wouldn't cool food?
It wouldn't get hot.
Okay.
And oven did not work.
So all you could potentially have is next day pizza, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was warming up tortillas. That's all I could do.
For 7 hours.
Yep. So I was fed up with that. So he came out and he said, well, some of these leads in the meter are wrong. These wires are all shot to hell. So he had the power company come out. I waited several hours, and I was supposed to be going out to Morgantown with my girlfriend that night. We were supposed to leave at 2. I waited till about 7 to finally leave because the guy didn't show up. Why would they?
Yeah.
We said it was an emergency.
It's Friday. He's got things to do.
Exactly.
Bigger than this job.
So he ends up calling me about Saturday afternoon and says, hey, I noticed, that your house is, I'm sorry, it's deemed a fire hazard. So I have to turn off your power. Now that I've seen it, you actually become a liability, and I can't walk away without having shut this off. I'm on the road. I'm actually in West Virginia now, and I'm like, is there any way I can get you to stop? And he's like, I will be held liable if anything happens. And I was like, I really wish it would because I'm tired of this place. If you could just walk away. He didn't. You know, he turned my power off. So just right then I knew, okay, everything's screwed. Cat was left home,
I want to summarize. So you're in such a good place mentally that he tells you he has to shut off the power so your house won't burn down, and you say, I wish it would to him.
Yes. I said it would solve a lot of problems. Now, I say that because I believe my cat would magically get out.
I was going to say, you have multiple pets in the house.
I had the dog with me, and I just think the cat would figure it out.
Cat would be spry.
He'd be fine. He'd figure it out.
He's only covered in fur. He could jump through 4, 10 feet of flame. And yeah, they're survivors.
So I figured he'd be all right. But
you know, the cat probably actually knows the electrical issue better and said, you know what, this thing's it's gone.
He seemed fine with it.
He would leave.
Yeah. He's been digging a hole for 2 weeks through one of the walls. Right.
So I got back and I realized they actually pulled the meter because I came fully prepared. I had, don't tell the power company, but I had already bought bolt cutters. I was going to turn my own power back
on. I have them in my trunk in case I ever get the boot in D.C.
Wait. Let me get this straight. You had purchased bolt cutters with the intent of literally cutting electrical wires with them.
No, not electrical wires, but I was imagining that he put a lock, like, say, on like a giant comical lever that
I was gonna say so you live in Looney Tunes and he cut off your Acme power.
It's actually a plunger.
Okay. Yes.
And he propped it up. But he actually took the whole meter, the big bubble with the spinny thing on the outside of your house, just took it right off the house. There was no getting it back on. I did think about putting tinfoil in there. No, I wouldn't actually do that. That would cause a fire.
Yeah.
But then after that, I proceeded to clear out everything in my fridge because it had already been several days.
Right.
So that was just kind of a bummer. And then ever since, I mean, I've just been kind of hoboing it. I stayed with my brother a couple nights. I stayed with my girlfriend. I stayed with John.
Mm-hmm.
We had a sleepover.
John
and mom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
John and mother. Continue.
And mother. Sorry. I forgot I have to call her that while I'm there.
Yeah. Otherwise, it doesn't sound all Norman Batesy.
But she was sweet.
So is this going to be resolved? Is this going to – any plans here?
That's
why we have you here today, Sean. He needs to live in the theater for the next month.
I wouldn't mind that at all. I'm hoping at any moment I will be receiving a call from one Dr. Watts. By the way, that's the name of my electrician.
Dr. Watts.
Dr. Watts.
Also a great jazz musician.
Who looks like Michael J. Fox. It is great.
Wait, Michael J. Fox, like, in his heyday or Michael J. Fox?
Yeah, in his heyday.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't trust Michael J. now around my wiring.
Electrician.
I half expect him to say, like, man, this electrician problem is heavy. And I don't know why that hits home with me, but that's, like, how I remember Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future. Nobody uses heavy anymore. I half expect him to say that.
I need to hear more of this Michael J. Fox impression.
Man, that's heavy.
All right.
That's pretty solid, right?
That's Sean, like it's like straight out of Family Ties.
Yeah, if you close your eyes.
Well, you can thank Sean for that. I've gotten better.
Ladies and gentlemen, my premier student doing an imitation
you
of
did
Michael
call Bell. Me a prodigy with me.
I just that's opened right. my eyes. Where's Alex P. Keaton? I am.
that's just where I'm at right now. Hopefully I'll be getting a call telling me that the county has certified the work and the power company will be turning it back on tonight.
Well, good.
But if that's not the case, I'll probably come out to D.C. and see the show.
Go.
I'd like to go back home eventually. I'm just living out of bags
right
now.
This man's rooting interest.
He's going to call the power company right now.
That's right.
He wants to sell him
a ticket. Fill a seat.
Yeah.
And there you have it. That's how I'm doing. I'm just kind of running around living out of bags.
That's so you're hoboing, which I at certain times in my life, if I'm more
I'm
the
not,
homebody,
I'm a
mood,
singing hobo, not a stabbing hobo. Just to be clear,
you will exchange stories for sponge baths. Sean, I don't know if you're a big Simpsons guy. If you,
I will always like we'll always lay down Simpsons.
Yeah,
Simpsons,
yeah.
So
I'm like the first 6 or 7 seasons.
I was just gonna say,
I'm an old man.
I can reference the good ones.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to get into, like, the third episode where Mo goes on a date and she turns out to be out of his league, well, maybe I can't track with that.
No.
But there was a time I'd get a good Sizzlack reference. I had fun this morning.
Yeah, how was your morning? How was your week?
My week? My week has been slow. I've been doing a lot of CrossFit because I'm sick of being the fat boy on stage at Sean's place.
Good on you, brother.
Thank you. So I've taken a lot of laxatives.
John, if
yes.
you, I can't cast you if you don't if you lose weight. I'm sorry, I just can't cast. I need that slot filled. Okay,
I'm going to be like Horatio Sands when like his career stalled, and he's like, now I'm the handsome leading man.
Exactly right.
People are like, one, no, you're not.
First of all, you're not fat, John. So please don't.
Thank you.
You're not fat.
Thanks. That's why I had him on. Pete, you say it too now.
You're not. Gorgeous. Lovely.
Hold on. I have to go to the bathroom and do things to myself. I'm a skinny bitch. But yeah, I wanted to. There was a time it elicits laughter sometimes. There, about 10 years ago, I was a personal trainer.
Really?
Yes, very briefly. I quit my 9-to-5 and I did like a month of personal training. And then I was like, why am I doing another job I don't care about waiting to get into radio? Radio isn't exactly rocket surgery. I'm pretty sure I can just say, hey, I want to do radio stuff now, and they'll hire me to at least wipe down urinals.
So were you a personal trainer at, like, a chain gym?
I was at the Washington Sports Club.
Nice!
Yes. They put you through a program, and after a couple of months, they would certify you. And I was, like, 1 month in, and they had just assigned me my first client, and I was just like, ah, the hell with this, because... So much of it was like wax on, wax off stuff where they're like, you're going to personal train eventually, but right now there's a lot of sweat on the treadmills and you need to wipe that up. And Sean, Pete, let me just say, this never crosses your mind when you're in a gym. That place gets dusty as a bitch in 4 hours.
Really?
Like, you, to keep it clean, have to do 3 to 4 sweeps in the course of a day.
Wow.
Wiping down every
because there's a lot of human beings there, and that's what dust is human flesh. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Yeah. Isn't that most dust is like your skin molting?
Yeah, like, I mean, you get
off
the squat rack.
I think a good portion of it is.
And it's like a mummy died there.
I think a good portion of it is, and I hate to tell you you're wrong, but I think it was debunked because I think somebody used that in the movie Sunshine, and there was just so much dust inside of the spaceship that they finally got to it, and they were like, well, that's because it was comprised of human skin, and they had lived there for, like, so many. But I think it was debunked.
Okay. Right. Well, then I stand corrected.
I'm sorry. I hate to do this. But I am the producer.
So with your first client, mm-hmm. were you like, you know what, let's just go get some beers. You know, put down those weights. They're going to hurt you.
It was a portly guy, and I was like, come on, guy. Like, this is going to be a lot of work, but it's happy hour until later on the corner. Let's do this. Half off chicken wing dings. No, I'm good with people in short bursts for the most part. Like, if you're an actual friend, I can shoot the S with you all day long, and that's fine. And nowadays, I work my day job. I'm a locksmith, so I can talk to you for like a half hour or so in a very good way. You know, I seem normal and stuff, but I don't really care to call a relationship with the average person where I'm getting them to come back week after week after week. And personal training seemed very manipulative in a way that you really just become their friend who sits there and like watches them lift in front of you.
Right.
Yeah.
Because for the most part, these guys aren't whipping up new programs every week. Like, you give them something that they're going to do, like, 2 months ad nauseum.
Right.
And then you're really just there to be like, come on, guy, come on. Yeah, you got it.
You kind of just pay for companionship.
You really do. Yeah. You pay
for... And then it's pretty similar because he throws a towel at you at the end. It's just like, all right, clean up and get out of here.
Be gone. And it didn't resonate with me. I don't know.
Yeah,
it wasn't my bag. So I didn't like that. But... that was about, you're talking 10 years ago, where I was in very good shape. And since then, I've taken up the sport of weight gain.
And I hear the program is really, you have to really commit to that, though.
And yeah, you're talking 2-a-days, 3-a-days.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
Damn.
Referring to pancake breakfast. Right. You know, just gotta be okay with some Bisquick pancakes at 10 p.m.
Right.
But, you'll see the results. And I just recently was like, look, I'm trying to do things on stage. I'm trying to, like, going through your classes and stuff. I'm like, oh, this isn't going to be me behind a microphone all day. I actually will be in front of people.
Right.
And I would, like, perform alongside Pete for a couple of these things. And, like, after shows, no offense, Pete, but I'd like to think at least comedically we're on the same level. Like,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, you're not a young Andrew Kaufman over here,
nah,
nor am I.
That's okay.
We're same.
I can live with
same
that.
Same tier. Yeah, we're in the same sinking lifeboat. And girls would kind of like just throw you panties like Liberace style
It has happened.
Yes, and I would just see that and, like, just bite through my knuckle. Just like, God, son of a bitch.
John, check out this email I just got. Check out this random text.
Yeah, he would just send these things, and I'd be like, that's cool. My cat might fall asleep on me tonight, and that'll be what I'm doing.
So I think, A, that you're being way too hard on yourself.
That's my life story.
So here's an antidote that my wife has shared with me.
Okay.
So you've seen my wife, right?
Yes.
A relatively attractive,
oh, yeah.
very beautiful, right?
I always love being put in this place, but you can never be like, oh, hell yeah.
What a, she's a dog.
Knock the bottom front sides out of that.
That's right.
have to be like, yes, very handsome.
She
woman.
Told me that there were only two people that she was like, knew she was destined to marry, mm-hmm. like when she was younger, right?
David
right?
Cassidy and?
Well, she'll cut your throat. She's not that old. Foo Fighters,
Dave Grohl, right?
And she adored Chris Farley. She adored,
really?
Yeah. Huh. So, and again, you know, a good, relatively good-looking guy, not the lightest dude on the planet, right?
What? No.
So I think that maybe you should say, again.
So you're saying go in the other direction.
No, don't go in the other direction. But by saying that you're selling yourself short, you are a sexy guy.
Thank
John,
you.
You should own that sexiness.
I'm sweating to the point my glasses are fogging just being in a studio. But thank you.
But I want to talk about CrossFit. So
sure.
Is this a recent? Have you done this recently? Meaning, have you gotten involved in it recently?
The last month.
Are you now in two cults?
Yeah, that was my question, because you're in improv, which is, you know, drinking Kool-Aid left and right, and you're now in CrossFit, which is constantly, as best I can tell, constantly having to defend itself against the idea that you are joining a cult. A cult with a positive gains on the end, as opposed to, you know, castrating yourself and drinking Kool-Aid.
Waiting for the hail bop.
Exactly, right. So do you feel like, what's going on there? Do you feel like you're...
I'll tell you what convinced me, this is going to make you laugh, that it was the way to go.
What's that?
The other cult leader's name is Sean, too. Let's me keep things straight. I walk into a place and I'm like, great leader is Sean.
Do me a favor and don't go Google alt-right leaders named Sean.
Okay?
Because I don't want you to go down that.
He really makes a few cogent points. Why don't you come with me? No, I like it because I'm pretty much, it's like a frat. I'm paying for friends.
Right.
I'm paying for people where I know I need to be at the gym at a certain time.
Right.
And it's way more expensive than a normal gym. Normal gym, let's say, give or take, 40 a month.
Right.
This is like $160.
Right.
But they're, I think starting Wednesday, I then get put into a nutritional thing as well. And I'm like, $160 for like diet crap and lifting, like that's not a bad deal. I enjoy it well enough. I mean, given the weight, a lot of it's like body resistance and running. So you see like these like 98-pound Asian chicks just lapping me. And I'm like, oh, that is not good for the ego.
Right.
And I'm sitting there just like, 2 minutes in, like heaving like I just saw my firstborn thrown off a cliff.
But I mean the difference between, you know, and I'm probably not telling you something you don't already know. The difference between like, say, joining a Washington sports club mm-hmm. or going to CrossFit is you don't walk out of a Washington or you don't walk out of a CrossFit going, you know, I just phoned it in today. You're there. You're committed. You're in. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's very I think it subscribes to that to get into the personal training crap. If you ever heard of, like, what is it, high intensity training, HIIT,
right.
Where the logic is like 30 seconds of sprinting where you're really going to get done and just vomit is worth like 10 minutes of jogging. Like
if you
get over that threshold. And I think that's what they subscribe to. A lot of the workouts, no joke, are 10 minutes of me just like cycling through, like jump on a box, grab a ball and hurl it over your head and then take a kettlebell and swing it like a weapon and then just do that. Like, great, you completed one cycle, do it again and again and again. And by like cycle two, at least for me, like other people will crush it.
Right.
But you know, cycle two or three, I'm just hunched and like,
but this is something, and you, I'm sure that you weighed these benefits as well before you joined. This is something that people don't talk about, you know. Come the collapse of Western civilization, which, as we currently know, is imminent. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
If you know, if it doesn't happen like any time in the next year, by the time that happens, you're going to be in amazing, great shape. You will be one of the leaders, the tribal leaders of an entire, you know, you'll get panties thrown at you all the time.
I can't wait. Yeah. There are a lot of spear hunting bonus classes that go with the place, and now it all makes sense. And it is funny because, yeah, we'll all hit the fan in 3 weeks, and this idiot's fixing his power for like $2,000. Joke's on you, Pete, Mr. Homeowner.
I'm trying to get out of there, man. I'm trying to get out of there so that we can move into a place, and then I'll also do the CrossFit, and I'll stay one step ahead of you.
I can't wait to live with you so every night can be going to Wegmans at 11
p.m. So that I have time alone?
Yeah, and I can watch you buy your horrible canned liquors, and then we can you can hunt down, what was it, dim sum? What the hell were you looking for last night?
Oh, pot stickers,
You wanted just pot stickers? And it's
I was losing my mind.
Yeah, he was losing his mind looking for big bags of frozen pot stickers. I actually wasn't that hungry. This was after your improv jam Wednesday night.
Right.
And this is going to be the trajectory of our friendship. He goes, finds a horrible can of, what is it, vomit
it's
cylinder?
It's a Lime-A-Rita, but yeah. It is basically vomit in a can.
He drinks the
really
worst
is.
Malted beverages, like the hobos.
I'm from Woodbridge. What can I say?
That bag outside of your theater.
Yeah, but Pete, your birth isn't your destiny. You
know, yeah, it's true.
You can
I need to upgrade.
You know, you can maybe go with a Michelob Light or something.
Yeah.
Well, then I got back to John's house drank High Life.
Yeah, I drank High Life with me, so I'm not going to out of a crisper drawer. So I'm not going to act like I'm Captain Class over here. But you bought all these bags of frozen crap. And I actually had wanted to go to bed, would have gone to bed empty stomach, possibly like lost 3/10 of a kilo?
Yeah, you would have, maybe you would have.
And
all right.
Instead at like 12:30, we're up watching Life After Porn 2, or After Porn Ends 2 on Netflix. My mom is baking pot stickers for us.
We're drinking, that was amazing.
Yeah, we're drinking High Life, and then
especially because you were microwaving them, and then I made the specific request that they be baked.
Yeah, little Lord.
I'm the guest there. And
Lord
I'm like,
Fauntleroy over here is like, these are soggy! And of course, I'm
How
a slob.
How dare you serve me this?
The instant I smell food, I'm like, who cares? Just eating them like Jabba with that alien he puts in his mouth, and then
sleepovers.
Yeah, and then you had the two trays of baked goods, and again, Pete's over here like freaking Goldilocks. This is too hot, and I'm just shoveling them in one after the other.
I think this is true. I think my favorite image of this description of this knockdown dragout party that you had,
yeah, it was great.
Is you're watching Life After Porn 2. Your mom in the other room.
She's great.
Just bringing in trays of pot stickers.
Old John Keys going like, the two joys of my life are my grandkids and pussy. And my mom's just like, here's your dipping sauce.
Getting all the pussy I can handle.
After Porn Ends and After Porn Ends 2 are both amazing, by the way, on Netflix.
I think I've seen After Porn Ends.
The second one is that much better.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Luke finds out it's his dad at the end. It's
what?
not to give it away.
Spoil it. Jesus.
Does anybody actually finish school in the second one?
Oh, no, but there...
It felt like that was everybody's MO. They're like, I'm just doing it for school, man.
I'm just going to get through college. Yeah.
And they're like, no, this is a pretty sweet gig. I'm going to stick around until they kick me out.
It is amazing because they dig up a lot of people like Ginger Lynn. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you're a porn guy, but she was like the huge...
Oh, yeah.
Right. Everyone knows Ginger Lynn.
Who doesn't know Ginger Lynn?
Exactly.
Oh, hey.
Sean's over here polishing his monocle. Like, I made a...
My electrician's calling.
Twice. Yeah. Oh, you can take that if you need to.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can get them on.
Oh, you want to? All right. So they're interviewing her and a bunch of other, like, Chasey Lane.
Right.
She's of the Jenna Jameson era.
Right.
And it was just so funny to hear about these people, like, describe just this bygone halcyon era of porn, where it was like, I used to make like $5,000 a movie. and the money you would make stripping, I don't even want to get into that. It was so funny hearing how many industries, like me doing radio and knowing what podcasting has done to radio.
Right.
It's funny to know just how many industries, I'm sorry, but the internet has screwed and ruined.
Well, I mean, it's the attitude these days, and this is the thing that a lot of creatives, like designers and artists and photographers are discovering. It's like people think that you should be able to get this stuff for free, that you should be able to get the talents of someone for free.
It's maddening.
To be honest, I was in a bit of I'm waiting for the day, I'm sure it's going to come, in which improvisers are basically computer animated images. And you're not even going to need human beings anymore. that
oh, I know entirely what you're.
It's. Yes. I mean, I know that sounds like very science fiction-y and conspiracy theory, but it's essentially going to happen. Well, hell, I mean, like I stopped seeing all the Star Wars films. You know, after back in the 80s, so I haven't seen. I saw
the Ewoks turn you off.
You said the word. I told you not to say Ewok in front of me. But I mean, like for instance, the image of Peter Cushing being, you know,
Grand Moff.
Yeah, Grand Moff Tophet being you know, embedded into what's essentially a film that was made last year.
Yeah.
Should scare the shit out of everyone.
Yeah,
because I mean you know what do we need to, and you know as well as I do that I'm sorry we're getting off topic.
We're talking
fun topic like porn and now we're
exactly.
Those. But I mean
people are having to zip back up, Sean. Thanks, buddy.
We all know that the current crop of movie stars are basically replicated. It's our generation's answer to this. For instance, I always say that George Clooney is our generation's Cary Grant, right?
Okay.
That Brad Pitt is our generation's Robert Redford, right? Right.
Yes, I have.
So, heard that. And the movie business has often operated in this because those guys would get old and die.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's going as people
like,
are wanting
like the way there was like five lassies.
Right. So what's to stop them? What's from taking from just simply creating Brad Pitt movies? From here's the perpetuity, rather than seeking out another, given how much technology has moved forward, you could basically make Brad Pitt do anything you want him to do on a computer screen. So I'm fearful for
speaking of porn too,
after porn too.
There's going to be a lot.
There's going to be some Brad Pitt porn out there.
Exactly.
But my point is, I mean, you know, I didn't mean to veer us off into this rant-esque topic.
No.
Not just porn stars. Every day, some of the great actors, writers, producers, directors. The creative class is going to disappear, perhaps in my lifetime. Not at wholesale levels, but we're not going to see. You know, computers are writing novels now. What do you need a writer for if the computer?
No, everything's going to disappear. They've kind of quantified already what makes like a pop hit a pop hit.
Right,
like,
right.
You know, you're like X beats per minute, and you know someone hitting these pitches, and everything's going to go that way, and eventually the human element will be taken out. And all I can hope is that people are kind of disgusted by that, but they won't be. When has humanity ever not let you down?
Good point. I have a theory that people are going to treat live theater the way they treat vinyl records in the future, as this sort of like throwback thing that only a few people are really into.
Like kitsch.
Yeah, yeah. When there's so much, you know, when there's so much narratives being produced digitally that. And you don't even have to leave your home. You don't have to, you know, you to see it. You'll be able to see it anywhere. In public, the screens will appear.
Well, I think once...
That seeing a live production is going to be like
riding a horse somewhere.
Listening to a vinyl record. Listening to vinyl records in the way that vinyl records are treated in our culture right now. So
yeah, it...
You know, Pete's going to come back and hear us talking and go, what the fuck?
Yeah.
We were having fun.
They're both crying.
What's going on now?
No, it's and you have to think once it can be generated is going to be more and more like the same way Netflix is like, we recommend for you. Like, you know, for me, it's like, you just finished After Porn Ends 2. Like,
right.
Here's something else you can kind of wank it to.
Right.
But you got to figure once there's going to be algorithms sniffing out like what everyone likes, then it's going to auto-generate based on what you like.
Right, and exactly.
Then we're going to all completely live in our bubbles, and if like you thought there was a divide between like the Fox people and the MSNBC people, now you will feel that with like every other human being.
Exactly, right.
Okay,
well,
it was time to kill ourselves on air.
Nice being, it was great having the meager existence we had on this planet.
It's really creepy to me, I think, especially our ages, given what we will see probably collapse in our lifetime.
Right.
And people, myself included, we just seem to love the internet. And like, I've had so much more fun with my life, like the last 6 months, going out to your theater and doing that kind of stuff and actually interacting with people. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'll still run back home afterward and be like, oh, thank God. Just 4 hours of
After
HBO
Porn
Go.
3 is
exactly. After Porn 3 is just me and a wife beater eating taquitos. I'm done with my porn now. Mom, more taquitos. I don't know if you wanted to go down this route with the show, but I, and maybe it's a little rude with Pete gone.
Who cares? Exactly. He's that bastard. He's too good looking.
You know, pretty son of a bitch. Yeah. Now we can get some eyes on us before he gets
exactly
back.
Exactly right. Take a look, YouTube viewers. Here's the hotness right here.
I wanted to learn like your improv life story. Like what got you into improv? What spoke to you about improv? Not to make this too
very pretentious. I should have a British accent.
Yes.
What spoke to me? Thank you for asking.
Yeah, because like for me, I'll just give an example. I liked it because I've enjoyed radio for years. I grew up listening to Don and Mike and Howard Stern. I always say these things. Mm-hmm. And once I started learning of improv, I don't know why I didn't put this together, but I was like, oh, that was audio improv.
Exactly.
Like they weren't really, you know, doing different characters, but they were in the characters of Don and Mike.
Right?
Yes, exactly.
That's my Don and Mike impression. Don Geronimo.
What did you like in comedy as a kid? Like, were you the weird guy into comedy? Were you a theater dude? What was your story?
Well, here's two things sort of happened simultaneously when I was younger. One of them sort of happened to me, and the other one thing sort of happened. So I was born with a stutter. I'm a stammer, and it actually might manifest itself during this broadcast. And because I stuttered, I was hesitant and reticent to talk.
Okay.
And for fear of kids would make fun of me, and the kids did make fun of me, you know. So, but at the same time, because I wasn't fluent, I didn't have the capacity to access language as readily as other people did, mm-hmm. as limited as it was when I was younger.
And was it harder for you to speak? Because I mean, like, I'll hear you stutter when you're talking at the theater sometimes, but like, you're pretty good, like 99% of the time. Was it more?
These days, the stutter manifests itself when
you're holding in a fart.
I think we can shut down this broadcast right now because we've got over the apex.
Got you some charcoal boxers. You're all set, buddy.
No, it manifests itself when I'm tired or when I'm really, really anxious or like Pete and his anxiety, right?
Yes.
When my anxiety is amped up, that's when it manifests itself. And it manifests itself for one specific reason. Because when I'm talking, I really have to concentrate on what I'm saying.
Okay.
Because at the same time that I'm talking, I'm taking a half split second faster thought thinking about the thing I'm going to say. And so I have to recognize if there's a troublesome word or a word that's going to keep me from being fluent. Consonants are a little trouble.
Is it a set thing or does it shift?
I have some challenging words. Okay. Things that have words, names that start with I, like Indira or things like are a problem for me. And I know what they are. But
you have female Indian students coming. You are Susan now.
Yeah, that's right. Because that's not racist at all. So I have to think simultaneously about what I'm saying to circumnavigate around that word.
Okay.
And when I get tired or when I get nervous, it's hard for me to concentrate.
Do that split second.
So that's when it does manifest itself. But when I was younger, I would listen to people and fetishize their fluency. That's why I describe it. Because I was amazed that people who I could tell were just, I was, you know, had a bit more on the ball intellectually, even as like a kid. They could talk and I couldn't. Mm-hmm. And so it made my stammer made me a listener. I would listen to the way people talked and their inflections and how they use language, their verbal tics. And that turned me into a mimic. It turned me into privately, I would I've talked about this recently, given the death of Adam West. I would do an imitation of Adam West as the Joker in the privacy of my room. And I'd be doing this imitation. So one afternoon, I was playing, we're outside playing as a kid, you know, hey, let's play Batman, right? And this is the big argument of results, who gets to be Batman and who has to be the Joker and whatever, right? So I started talking like Adam West, and my friends like, what? They were pretty amazed by that. And so let's do that again. So I basically just did, and so that sort of, that one moment, I trace it to that one moment, made me understood that I have an ability with voices mm-hmm. and accents and things. I have an ear for it.
Yeah.
And also that I really like performing. Like, I liked finally having that attention for something that I normally got negative attention for.
Yeah.
I don't want to burst your bubble, but I think my Michael J. Fox is better.
Yeah, no, I'm. You know what? I'm going to bow to that one. Yeah.
But when you first did your Michael J. Fox,
whoa.
Did all the kids on the playground?
Yeah. Heavy.
Yeah. Whoa.
Can you just
do Teen Wolf again. Mal. Mallory.
Heavy.
Mallory.
I'm a wolf. Hey, guys, I'm a
that
wolf.
That is pitch perfect. I don't know why.
Remember when I bit that beer can?
Whoa. So that there was that aspect, and then when I was 11 years old, the first season of SNL started.
Okay,
and so every Saturday night I was watching SNL. So I was, but I never sort of really put it together that you could go do like and even as I got older, and so my first inspiration was SNL. But even when I was older, I never connected the dots that. The people on SNL got on SNL because they went to this place called Chicago and they did this thing called improv. Same thing here. You know, this was before the internet, before you could research stuff like that. So I started doing, because of my performance abilities, I started doing plays in high school. And
Drama
weirdo, right? That guy. And so I liked performing. And I again, like many of us, I sort of like put all that aside to join the military. I was in the Air Force, just like Pete was.
Yep. Thank you for your service, which I've never said to this
thank
one.
Thank you for your service.
That's what we can do as a Jesse Ventura impression. We just go, thank you for your service.
All right, brother.
I was a Navy SEAL.
So yeah, I mean, I'm telling you, I'm sorry, I'm talking way too much, but
that's not good on a radio show.
Yeah, no,
we need some silence, buddy.
But I spent about 13 years away from performing, then got back into it.
So you're saying you joined like 18, 19 in that range, and then you did not perform again until you're like almost 30.
No, because I spent 4 years in the military. I got married right after I left the military. I began piecing together my education. And my career working in advertising, so I didn't really have much time to do that. About in my early 30s, I sort of said, "Oh, you know what? I've put that performance guy on the shelf for long enough. Let's bring him back out and see what happens." And so I started taking theater classes. I started, you know, I was living in Utah at the time, and
hotbed of theater.
Which, well,
you know, actually really good.
Yeah, it's surprisingly really good.
Okay,
that's where I was living.
In fact,
who's the asshole now?
I started taking classes with a guy named Kent Bateman, who was teaching in Park City, who's the father of Justine and Jason Bateman. Let's connect that.
That sounds familiar.
Give me a Michael J. Fox. Give me a Michael J. Fox.
Whoa, hey.
Talk to your sister Mallory.
Mallory, why'd you finish the milk?
Perfect. So I started taking classes with him. I'll wrap this up. Long story short, he introduced us to this thing called improv, which mm-hmm. I had never heard before. A few months after that, I started seeing short-form improv. It started making its way into the culture.
And by that, you mean like Whose Line?
Whose Line's It Anyway? Right, yeah. And so I when I saw that, I go, I can do that. That much I knew. I knew that I had the ability to think fast. Because of my stammer, mm-hmm. it made me think really quick. And it also, you know, I had the voices and the characters, and I could, you know, do the standard cliche ones. And I was really good at imitating people in my life as well. So I got involved in improv when I was living in Hawaii. Soon after I left Utah, my ex-wife got stationed in Hawaii. And that's sort of how I got into it. And then I began performing it, joined a troupe, and after about 7 or 8 years of doing it, moved to the D.C. area and began teaching it at the D.C. Improv. So,
nice.
You know, that's the thumbnail.
I got a quick question from the chat here. Nate asks, what comics inspired you as you were growing up?
Everyone has their favorite stand-up comics.
Mm-hmm.
But the people.
Sinbad.
A former Air Force guy. I don't know if you knew that.
Really?
Yeah, okay. He spent 4 years in the Air Force.
He also guarded the first kid one time.
That's right. Alongside Phil Hartman, I think.
Yes.
Improvisational actors are the ones I sort of like, you know, I was always a Belushi guy. I was one of my favorite performers, and I sort of didn't really know she was an improv person. The first season of SNL, Lorraine Newman She was and is stunning. And nobody, she never makes the list. She never makes anybody's hot list.
I don't even know the name, honestly. So
she was in the first cast of SNL, the first season of SNL. Okay. And she was trained at the Groundlings in Los Angeles. That's where she did. And if you look at her, all the work she did, she created a brand new different character for almost every single sketch she was in. And she was amazing. And she was only like 22 years old. I think she's extraordinarily underrated. She's one of my favorites.
How long was she on the show?
The first five seasons. She was on the cast of that show.
That is damn forgotten, dude.
If you go back and watch the first seasons, she was always playing. She did this one really well. She always played the female newscaster. Chubby, I'm standing here in front of the Empire State Building. Havoc is ensuing. She was just really good at that.
Okay.
Bill Murray, of course. Everyone loves Bill Murray.
Do you think that's gone too far at this point?
What do you mean?
Like the weird hipster worship of Bill Murray? Or
I mean,
you're like, he's that damn good.
Come on. I mean, has he, despite the fact that he's not being managed by anyone, has he made a false move in his career? He's done pretty
good point.
Well.
Yeah. I know that he just goes around and just like is Bill Murray professionally now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there was one thing that was written about him, I think in Rolling Stone. I forgot what bar he went to, where he would just pretend to take people's orders and like listen really intently, like, oh, a sex on the beach and two, and he would just come back with tequila. And I was like, you know, everyone's laughing about that. I would probably just want my goddamn Miller Lite.
That's hilarious, though.
It's funny, and you get to say Bill Murray gave me tequila, but then you're like, then I got that DUI.
I think one of the funniest Bill Murray stories I've heard was like about 5 or 6 years ago, he was arrested in Sweden or Denmark for drunk driving a golf cart through the street. That's
classic.
It's small enough to be safe. Where you're like, you can't really kill someone with a golf. Aww.
Bill Murray, Phil Hartman. I'm a huge Phil Hartman guy. I think that he's the best sketch/improvisational comedian we've ever produced. There's a reason, if you've read the like Tom Shales book on Saturday Night Live, there's a reason the writers called him the glue, because he could do anything. He could do crazy characters. He could play the straight character inside a sketch with some wacky character. I'm a huge Phil Hartman fan. So.
It's taken me a lot of time to really appreciate what I was seeing in Phil Hartman, because like when he was coming up, I was like 9 or 10. And caveman lawyer. Yeah. You know, like
I didn't really caveman lawyer.
I didn't really get what level he was bringing to it. I was like, that brow's funny.
Yeah.
And years later, I've never heard anything but amazing things personally too, because I don't know about you. If someone's really talented, but also a horse's ass, it's very much a mixed bag, but like Phil Hartman was like Christ on earth.
Yeah. I mean, everyone loved him and adored him. I mean, he's completely egoless for the most part about what he did.
Yeah. So. It wasn't, you know, it's not it, like rooting you know, it, for it, Axl Rose.
It, yeah. Egoless in the way that improvisers should be, I think, you know.
Yeah. Like you were saying, I think, Rob Riggle? I think you were telling a story one time that you saw Rob Riggle live, and it's like, he's Rob Riggle with like, you know, Joe Schmo 1 through 4.
Right.
And he was just in the background like this. Yeah,
he didn't upstage anybody.
No, because he realized that his job, you know, he trained at UCB.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing they tell you to do there is serve the scene. And he didn't have any sort of the funny takeaway lines. He wasn't doing wild, wacky characters. But he was grounding every scene he was in. Just, you know. And again, that's a guy who could have upstaged everyone and been
could have gone the other way. Every third line, just out of character. Right. I'm on TV.
I don't know if you know who I am, but I am Robert Riggle. Right. By the way,
Daily Show ring any bells?
Another former military guy. You're getting thank him for his service as well.
So. Yes, service. Every Christmas card I send him.
And he was in for a long time, too. He never even gave it up. He was doing Side by Side, I believe, when he was on The Daily Show.
Yeah.
He was still...
Yeah, I think he's in the reserves, which means that he has to go once a weekend?
Yeah.
Once a month?
Twice a month, I think.
Twice a month?
But still, like, he could have bowed out at any moment, but he still did that. And I know that you have to go to theater. when you do that too? I mean, there's no exceptions. You still have to show up.
Which one, like Second City or?
Yeah.
Lieutenant Regal, we're sending you to Second City. Your job is to infiltrate.
He might have gotten lucky and had that. Yeah.
We believe there's a terrorist presence.
Go to Iraq.
In a level 3 class that we want to make sure you root out.
Why didn't I see him on any USO tours?
Not yes, sir. Yes, and.
That's right.
But. Yeah. I thought it was really cool that he stayed in. He managed to do both those things.
Right.
That kind of reminds me of Ken Jeong, who was like, went the most safe conservative route,
right.
Like the good Asian boy route, where I'm like, I'm a dentist till I'm 36.
Right. Yeah.
Finally, I've saved enough for comedy.
Well, I mean, to bring this back to Phil Hartman actually had a very successful career as a graphic designer.
Really?
He designed some great album covers. Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young's Greatest Hits. He designed
that.
Poco's Will the Circle Be Unbroken, which is sort of a classic country rock album.
I actually know the name Poco.
So he had a career in Los Angeles as one of the go-to designers for rock bands and their album covers. But he noticed that he was spending a lot of time alone, you know, and he didn't really, he said, I need to get out more. And he did, just because if you're a graphic designer, you spend a lot of time back before they had computers, you know, drawing and doing mock-ups and things like that. So he lived in proximity to the Growlings Theater. And he said, one day I just went to the theater just to get out of the house. And he saw improv and it blew his mind. And he said, and because it was so close to where he was living, he began taking classes there, and the rest is history. So. Yeah, there are plenty of people who had, you know, careers before they went full bullet.
That's us.
Yeah, exactly. Please just say some of them were locksmiths.
Not yet.
I'll go. Oh,
they're going to be saying that about you, Papa. They're going to be saying, you know what, John Papa Giorgio was? A locksmith.
He can still bust into things.
And now he's got the key to my heart as the star of his own sitcom.
That will be the actual title of the show.
Key to my heart.
That's amazing.
I will
a locksmith by day, but he babysits
too. Rapist by night.
Why do we have to go there?
I don't know. I'll take your name off the show. Don't worry.
That's his go-to locksmith joke.
Yeah.
You know I can get into your house, right?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm not saying you should give it up. But...
Oh my God, that's a great premise for a show. You're a locksmith.
Locksmith
Rapist. And every episode, someone comes to you with something that needs to be unlocked. And, of course, whether it's a house or a safe deposit box or something like that. And, of course, you know, like a safe deposit box, you know, it opens up a whole threshold of memories that you help people process through.
By seizing.
If this does not get picked up, this is a great idea.
It's sort of like Quantum Leap.
Yeah,
as a locksmith.
Oh my God,
as a rapesmith.
It's the locksmith.
Yeah,
and there's like violins music, right? The locksmith starring John Papa Giorgio.
By season 6, we go like completely down the jargon route. Right. Like, all right, that's a Medico biaxial. Gonna need to get the carbon drills.
It's like the touch by an angel. Like every episode, someone would come to you. They would be in need of an angel. Like every episode, someone comes to you with some thing that needs to be unlocked. And of course, as we all know, locks and keys are metaphors, brilliant metaphors.
I do.
And you would help them solve these
and
problems.
At the end of every episode, it's you reading a Yelp review on how that person overcame personal tragedies.
4 stars, you C-bomb! The locksmith, 4 stars. I had the key. I couldn't get into my house, which is to say, I couldn't access the internal turmoil that was preventing me from. The locksmith helped. 4 stars.
Unlocked it all.
That's right. And then the final shot is of you like reading that with a nod of approval.
Yeah.
Another person helped. I don't know why you are not fielding calls from producers right now.
Oh, and it turns out, Dan didn't have a heart attack. He died, and the entire last season was a dream. No,
that's exactly what I mean.
God damn you, Rose.
Or
just
no.
Wake up in your mom's house.
No, the entire last season is actually, we see you and you're in prison.
Oh, wow.
And the locksmith has been your fantasies. Have you been in prison?
That's the saddest fantasy I've ever heard.
As you pen the last line in that book you just wrote.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
From that prison.
We have mapped out the entire narrative.
This is my career right here.
Our arc of this series. Pete, are we getting calls from producers? Because this should be done.
Yeah, I got one on the line.
Okay, good.
We're pretty much every minute we're doing the show now is a waste, and more so than usual, because now we have the locksmith.
That's right.
To bang out.
I'm already working on the website.
No, it's funny. I actually had an incredible locksmith encounter this morning, and I typically don't indulge in this when I have a customer, because a lot of times you will encounter female customers,
right?
And you're in the situation, you're killing time, and like after about 4 minutes of chatting with really most women, I'm like, run out of things to say. I guess we could like flirt a little, and you could rebuff me, because right. That's what's going to happen. But like I keep it always very professional, because as I did in a stand-up joke back in the day with my 5-week career, there is always that air of like, I know where you live,
right?
And you've seen how quickly I can get into
your
it.
House.
Yeah. So, you sure you want to say no?
Right. I mean, I'm sure if you were a pervy locksmith, you would not have much business. So.
No, yeah. I legit, yeah, because that's all you need. Like one Google review being like, he was obviously aroused.
Like, okay. Yeah, I was gonna say, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks. His pants were too tight.
I just ate a lot.
They weren't when he showed up.
Up eating taquitos with Pete. So you have to keep it like very like G-rated. Just like, oh, it's really humid out there. And all right, thanks for the money. Bye. But earlier today, I show up at a property, and it's a older woman, but still very comely.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants her locks changed, and I don't really ask why. And
you get this a lot, right? You get people women wanting their locks changed because they're kicking out a husband, a boyfriend. Do I have that right?
Oh, you read properly, sir.
Yeah, okay,
and
good.
I would say that happens at least once a month. One call is just like, I caught him screwing around. Like one chick legit called me like in tears, driving home from, you're the smart guy here, catching, was it Indelectale from... whatever.
Infragrant delecto.
Something, yeah. Like catching him.
If I say the French accent.
Dick in a cooter. That's what I'm trying to say. Classy like.
Smooth.
Yeah. And she was just like sobbing. And then I show up, and it's the one time I had a friend with me, and she was like stunning. I'm like, this is the one time I might have had a snowball's chance in hell, and I got just douchebag Tweedledum with me. So great. And, yeah, that is the situation with her. She starts going on about how her husband, I think they got hitched, she said, when they were both 18, and she revealed she was 55.
Mm. Right.
And she was saying he had been cheating at the very least for, like, the last 15 years.
Wow.
And she only learned of it because...
Yeah, when did this come to light?
He had sacked that girl and moved on to yet another one. And the girl who had been sacked called the house.
Hell hath no fury.
Yeah, exactly. And blew up his spot big time.
Wow.
And I did, like, I S you not, because I really, like, at the time, I was like, all I have to do is this show at noon, and then I just have, like, afternoon jobs. I sat and, like, talked with this woman on her couch for, like, 45 effing minutes.
Wow.
And just really got into the nitty-gritty, and she was like, what cracked me up the most, she was like, I really, really like hearing a man's point of view on why men cheat. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's so simple. Like, I just don't get why women don't digest the truth of it, where it's like, look, I love you very much. It's just fun to see where else I can put it.
Yeah.
There's no, and it's like, yes, but what am I not giving you in the relationship? It's like, you can't shapeshift. And it was just fun trying to like kind of hammer that home. Like, look, I'm sure he's effed up, and it's like he cheated to the nth degree.
Right.
Where he's coming back to your marital bed and is like, I had a nice day of not cheating on you, dear.
Right.
Wink. And, but yeah, it was interesting, like her background, like she was from the South and seemed very conservative and stuff, having to deal with the really a crappy husband by any measure from the sound of it. And the story goes nowhere.
But did you unlock some sort of like hidden feelings she's been?
Thank you for finding the game.
The locksmith.
touched by a locksmith.
I'd like to think that I contributed a little to her understanding of things because she was going on about his background. I'm like, well, this early loss might have contributed to him being afraid really to invest in anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, that's my excuse for screwing around. My dad died when I was 20. People are like, how does that make sense? You're like, I don't know. I just like pussy.
It's like exactly how I came up with maybe.
I had a friend one time who said that, he told me this. He said one time his ex-girlfriend asked him, what it is that men are looking for in women, and he said proximity.
Yeah.
maybe a little too bluntly honest, but yeah.
It is weird being hardwired the way we are, and it lends itself to good things. Like, I feel like creativity is really just your sexuality getting shoved out in different ways, but... Boy, it does not make us good for the domestic so much. It's a bad gig. You're married. You actually managed to...
I did. But I was in an 11 or 12 year marriage as well that didn't last. So, this is my
story. I was in a 3-year marriage that didn't last.
Yeah. I live at home with my mother.
Air Force.
So that's an interesting question. Were you married while you were in?
Yeah, while I was in. So when I was in, I've mentioned this on the show before. I feel like they put this sort of pressure on you. It's kind of subliminal, but it's not, it's not like, it's not in your face, but they remind you that you will get paid like 1.5 times what you would be making.
Right. Exactly.
You would get time off. If you ever spend too much time away from her, like, here's another paycheck.
Right.
They just throw a bunch of money at
you. Is that really just so you breed a soldier class, or is that the logic behind it?
I don't understand it. But I understand paying for it. Because you do have to make sacrifices if you're not going to be with your loved one. But a lot of people just kind of use it as it just triggers something in their brain. They're like, I got to get married. I mean, I've known this chick for 6 months. What the hell?
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the way it works. And I think the divorce rate in the military has got to be at least 50%.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, I think it's approximately 50% for almost all the country. But
Yeah.
It's pretty wild, though.
I thought it was right around 50, period. But sure. Before we let Sean go, I wanted to ask him a couple things that just came to my mind.
Yeah. Ready to field some questions?
Yes, I am.
Couple of questions.
Please do.
All right, so you are a great...
Wait, please. Yes. The locksmith.
The locksmith, yes.
Unlock me. Help me unlock me.
We just unlock
roll credits.
Some horrible repressed memory, and you're like biting your tongue off $1 Million Baby style in 30 seconds. Hold him down, Pete! All right, here's my biggest question. You're a teacher. You're a great teacher. And
you're very kind. Thank you.
You see people come through your programs and do, like, really just class after class after class.
Right.
I know just coming up with some people where I'm like, this is going to put you on the spot a little bit. I'm sorry in advance. I see people where after 6 months, I'm like, why the hell are you still making this same simple little mistake and, like, the basic thing in improv is yes and they will walk up and just deny a scene immediately. Be like, no, this is the scene. What you said is incorrect. Like, do you take that personally? Like, after X amount of months, are you like, where the F did I fail? Did I not shaken baby syndrome this person enough?
We're past the hour mark, by the way. So anything you say, we can totally cut off.
You can be
dirty now.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, let's open those
gates.
Just
want to put that out
there. Yeah.
Let me. So I don't. Let me put it this way. I don't get as annoyed with improvisers denying and saying no, at least in the sort of like textual sense. Like, as you guys both know, it's okay to deny. It's okay to say no on an improv stage, as long as you're providing some sort of information.
Yes.
The better choice, as we all know, is to over-accept an offer and just think that's the greatest thing. You're going to get to something faster. But, again, drama works in – theater works in conflict. And, sometimes it's okay to sort of create that conflict by saying, no, Dad, I'm not going to go to bowling with you. We're going to have it out right here, right? Mm-hmm. And we sort of get a viewpoint, a scene about, why it's important to this character's to have it out with his dad.
Well, I mean,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying that's great. I get that because even UCB, I think they shit on that. But I'm just saying, like, if someone walks up, it's like, oh, another day in the salt mines, and then
we're
person
not in
two's
the salt
like,
mines.
Yeah,
we're
in a drag racer.
You know? I don't know what to do about that, and I think it's, you know what it is. It's, and this is something that you guys have heard me say too. The essence of improv is listening.
Yes.
And reacting. You know, if I could just, you know, take some of my students and just get that impetus to be funny or clever or ego-driven out of their heads and just get them to be present, get them to understand that you know, I've had students say, like when they're on the back line in a long-form show, you know, and like, I go, how come you didn't go in? And they would say, well, I didn't have anything. And I'm going, that's the perfect ideal way to go in, because then you're accepting of just about any sort of gift that your scene partner has, or then there's no wrong choice to make. And so I guess I don't know. I don't take it personally. I don't take it personally because one of the things,
you know, they came in stupid.
Well, it's you've weirdly sort of pivoted into what I want to say.
Okay.
One of the things that I've often said is that smart people aren't always funny, but funny people are always fucking scary smart, always to a person. And not just smart in like the book sort of intellectual sense, mm-hmm. meaning they have EQ, they're quick. They know how to read context. They pick up on patterns really easily. And that kind of thing is...
Pete sounds like he's opening a condom.
Well, cool.
What do you can't hear it on mic.
Now that I've interrupted.
I'm just kidding.
But yeah, it's and some people just aren't never going to be smart in that kind of way. And that's sort of what I chalk that up to. That as I can pound away at it, I can just say... You know, I guarantee you that most people who make those kind of choices on stage are making analogous choices in their real life. They're awkward socially. They don't pick up on verbal cues. They don't pick up on context. That these kinds of things are a challenge for them every day, as opposed to just, you know, to be honest, nothing gives a personality away like the way in which that person does improv.
Hmm.
Nothing gives that away.
Hmm.
I do a lot of organizational corporate gigs, and it becomes readily apparent when I get teams, you know, colleagues, coworkers on their feet, just how good of a team they are and where the cultural challenges in an organization are. If I have some guy who like is the CEO and he or she is railroading through every scene, I want to go, this improv thing isn't really going to solve this challenge, because the challenge is actually with you.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to drive things, and
all you've accomplished is finding the asshole.
Exactly right. Exactly. Nothing gives away. Nothing. One of my favorite writers,
this,
Kingsley Amis, used to say that nothing gives bad people away like what they say and write.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that nothing gives people who are like challenged in a way, nothing gives them away like seeing them get up on their feet and do improv. You can see how much ego they're. You can see how well they listen. You can see how well they read context and cues. It's a dead giveaway. It really is.
Do you think that who is that character? That author again?
Kingsley Amis.
Kingsley Amis. I wonder if he would have a take on the tweets of one president. Right now.
he would find him insufferable. Yeah. He was just an awful
How would he act
being.
On the back line?
That's right.
Would he respond to all caps and
listen to
hashtags?
Listen to me. We're going to have a winning troop. We're going to be the best.
The word three times. That's how you know it's true.
This troop is going to win tonight.
That would be fucking gold. That would be a great bit.
He never goes to the back line.
He just stays out there. Shit out of anything.
Right. And if someone tries to edit him out, he just stays there.
Yeah, I'm not finished.
I'm sorry, I was talking.
It's so great. Any questions for the guru?
No, that was such a great question. That was a really great answer. I'm over here and I'm like, he is the real locksmith, because I'm over here getting all introspective. I'm inward looking.
The locksmith.
Am I smart enough?
Well, in your in your career,
mm-hmm. Is that what this is, a career?
It is. It is. I mean, dude,
you're in the basement.
Sometimes you look back at shit and you're like, oh, this is what I am. Oh, yeah. Same with me. Like, I started part-time, I guess, just to pay the bills as a locksmith at age 20. And the only constant, all the other jobs I've done, I've been at least part-time a locksmith. And now 36, I look back, I'm like, I've been a fucking locksmith for a long, like, I have a college degree, and I'm at least somewhat intelligent, and I hope those things aren't mutually incompatible.
Very intelligent.
I am a locksmith by trade, and that's, for you, like, are you, not to get too existential here, but, like, are you happy with how improv has played out for you? Like, do you like teaching? Do you wish you had made a bigger go of trying to get on SNL? Like, what gnaws at you? What are you happy about?
Mm-hmm. Because this is your full-time for
you are an improviser.
The past 3 years?
Yeah, 4 years approximately.
4 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. You call it a career. It isn't sort of hasn't officially become my career until, like, recently, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's funny because, like, people say I often get – people. Here's what happens a lot. People want to have coffee with me and talk about how I got here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, here, which is running a schmucky little 700-square-foot improv theater.
Say via car.
That's right. Well, yeah. But I mean, it's hardly glamorous. But my point is, my answer to always that is always, I have no idea how I got here. It was all a complete accident. Like, you know, I decided that I wanted to teach improv. And that turned into more opportunities, which turned into corporate gigs, which turned into, you know, the ability to finally open up a brick-and-mortar improv space of my own, I could call my own. I don't really know how I got here. But also, this is something I have to remind him. You know, I spent 20 years in advertising and public relations. So yeah. While I was, you know, working at night to sort of be a teacher and, you know, teach at places like the DC Improv, and then eventually at the Unified Scene Theater, I was also working a pretty damn demanding job as a creative at an ad agency, at various ad agencies, at, you know, big, huge ad agencies. So it's not like I woke up one day and said, it's a ground war. It's a war of attrition.
Oh, see, I thought you came up with where's the beef and then retired on that.
Well, that's
money.
Well, yes, because when you come up with that, you're cashing the checks. You're just burning money in the basement is what you're doing. I think if I do have one regret, about 12 years ago, my good friend Tim Martin said he was going to New York City. Mm-hmm. And I had just turned 40 when he decided to do that, and just started teaching at the DC Improv. I often lament, I infrequently
daily
once every six to 8 months I go
twice during the show.
Twice during the show, I've actually fantasized about having
this is what I produced. I made a horrible mistake.
I thought, well, maybe I should have gone to New York City with Tim. And even though I've been older, you know, I would have been there at UCB in the mid-aughts, which is when things started really sort of picking up for them.
Yeah, big time.
And I would have been relatively there at, you know, present at the creation. And maybe I could have done something else there. But then again, you know, I think about it, and I think the number of people, extraordinarily talented people, who made the same journey when they were younger and who are still in New York City just doing improv. They're not really, or have simply, you know, found something else to do in New York City. So, I mean, who knows what this is, we're getting rather existential. Who knows what my journey would have looked like had I done that? I think that I would have found myself aged out of a lot of opportunities, despite my gorgeous good looks. Mm-hmm. I think I would have been too old. And I think that, you know, it's funny because, and this is sort of a commentary on where we are right now, is something that has been readily apparent to me. Funny used to matter, meaning funny people like Belushi and John Candy and Chris Farley and other people who, you know, aren't relatively movie star good looking people. They could get a hearing on places like SNL or in various other cultures around at the time.
Oh no! What happened to us?
What happened?
No, no. Oh, you're like, oh, the fat funny people.
But I think that other improvisers are discovering the same thing now.
Okay.
But you could not be all that good looking and still be funny, and make a name for yourself. And there's stand-ups who operate the same way. These days, given how visually oriented our culture is, you have to have both. You have to be movies relatively telegenic.
Damn it, I have to get in that Gabriel Iglesias shape
another cult.
And funny. I mean, if you look at the cast of SNL over the last couple of seasons, 7 or 8 seasons, there haven't been that many.
You're right.
It's you have to have the looks these days. Whereas about, 15 years ago, you could still be, not all that good looking, but
kind of down to just Keenan.
Yeah. And that's
Keenan
and it's sad. It's sad because I guess when you could talk about it is the pretty people caught up. The pretty people sort of realized, oh crap, I'm not just going to be able to get by on my looks. I better have this talent, and began cultivating their talent at various theaters around the country. You kind of and I think I would have fallen into that vacuum that I'm older. I'm not movie star handsome. I have the chops.
I think you're damn good enough for the comedy world.
Well, I think I have some comic chops.
Backhanded compliment.
I don't think I would have gotten to what I call the top of the comedy food chain. I don't think I would have, and that's being realistic. I don't think I would have. And again, not even just on my comedy jobs. One of my best friends auditioned for SNL, and he's tailor-made for that show. Didn't get on.
Is that Tim?
Tim, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those moments in which I lament not going to New York, the reality sets in, and I go, yeah, if I'm going to be honest and realistic, it probably wouldn't have happened for me. So no sense worrying about that.
So we'll make our own damn famous.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll make our own videos. Make our own SNL.
Yeah. I was going to say, who's got some lead to drink? Because all over.
Really? And on that note, we're out. You know what the music means.
Yeah.
I think you already kind of fielded this question, but in the chat. I think you kind of already did, so I don't want to put you on the spot too much or make you ask too many questions. What would be your dream job if you're not already living it?
I actually wouldn't mind being a writer for, I think that I would, I think that I'd be good in the writer's room.
Same.
I think that I would actually be really good in a writer's room of a Netflix produced series or shows or show. I think I'd be good there.
That'd be fun.
Have you worked on that before? Like, do you do writing as well? Or
no. And this is something that, this is sort of the focus of my life right now. I'm trying to get out of the way of the theater. I'm trying to grow the theater enough so that it can be a bit more turnkey, and I can do less in it because I have a lot of creative ideas, and I wake up every day and just send emails instead of writing the things that I want to write. And there are hardliners who would say, well, that means you don't want it bad enough. I really fucking do want it bad enough.
Yeah.
And I think that that I need to start putting white on black or black on white. As they say in the writing biz.
No, you're going to write everything on a chalkboard.
I'm going to write everything on a chalkboard. That's right. Using black chalk. I need to start doing that. And I think that I would be – my dream job would to be a writer on something like Broad City, something like Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, something like that. That's a dream job for me. If I could wave a magic wand and have it happen, it would be
– Really?
Fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
And it's because – and I know we're going over time.
No, there's
I'm finding that whereas even as late as like 5 or 6 years ago, I really enjoyed performing.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy it as much as I used to. And, even like Laurence Olivier once said, I think I've used this quote in your classes. Laurence Olivier once said that he knew he was finished as an actor when he no longer had the impetus to walk on, when he had the desire to walk on stage and say, look at me, dig me, dig me. And that's happening for me. I sense that it's happening, that I don't need it as much. I used to need it a lot. Now I don't need it as much. And I think that writing and being...
That's your new need.
That's my new need, yeah.
Interesting, man.
Yeah. That's good.
Well, yeah.
Tom, look, you are the locksmith.
Yeah.
You are
getting
the
in deep.
Locksmith.
The locksmith.
You've unlocked my heart, John Papa Giorgio.
Well, shit, I'm not saying, like, I can't wait to have you out again. Is there anything you want to get in this time, though, Pete? Because after that...
I just want to say to the listeners, everybody, sorry it took me so long. Maybe we'll add this at the beginning of the show, or we'll put it in the blurb. But we are doing a live show at Summers, July 7th. It's tentative so far. We want to have a bunch of people. It's going to be Brian Bolte's going away. It's going to kick ass. It's going to take some names. I'd like to have you there, Sean.
Oh, my God.
I'd like to have you there, John.
I'll see if schedule permits.
We'd like to have everybody coming out. It's at Summers in Arlington. It's off of Courthouse Road. It's going to be an awesome time. It's a Friday night. It's going to kick ass. So we'll have some more details to come, but I want to give you guys the heads up.
Nice. That sounds fun, and I really will do my best.
Guys, thank you for having me on. This was really a lot of fun.
Thanks for coming, man.
Yeah, no, it's weird. You have to, as a student, like make that jump at some point where you're like, oh, this guy's like becoming my actual friend, not just the teacher I occasionally give money to. Not enough money, I might add, start up in that. Make it more, you can, you know, then really roll in that.
That's right.
Guys, get your sweet asses out to Unified Scene Theater.
Yeah. Honestly, do that. It's the best improv learning experience in the city. And really, we've gone to New York and we've done UCB, and it certainly shits on that place. So
can't
there
hold
you
a
go.
Candle to it. Yeah, and yeah. All the people that are there, it's really fantastic. I mean, we all hang out afterwards. It's a great community, and you need to get involved in it.
So, everyone, that was Sean Westfall. He's still here, actually, right, Sean?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. That made things awkward. Sean, is there, like, a Twitter, YouTube page, website, all that shit?
You can find me on Twitter at my handle, Sean Westfall. You can find me on Facebook as Sean Westfall as well. And that's S-H-A-W-N-W-E-S-T-F-A-L-L. More importantly, you can follow the Unified Scene Theater at Unified Scene DC. And you can follow, like us on Facebook, we have a Facebook page as well, and an Instagram, both at Unified Scene DC as well. So
they're all pretty fun. I follow everything, and I am just the biggest piece of shit about follow ratios and things like that. And even I have gotten off my ass and followed these accounts. You should too. And if you're in the DC area, Virginia, Maryland, please join up. Like, if you've ever wanted to do anything comedically, this is what you want to do. It's certainly...
Yeah, free improv jam this Sunday?
Yes. We have a free workshop on Sunday, June 25th, from 1 to 3 p.m. No experience necessary. Show up. ADT Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C., in Bloomingdale, and we'll teach you some improv.
There you go. And I will harass people personally. Cool. You blinked it to me in Morse. Yeah. I will find friends individually on Facebook and be like, join the cult, motherfucker. Pete, thank you. Pete, if the good people want to get a hold of your Instagram and ogle you.
They can get a hold of me on Instagram at ThatPeteMaybe. I am at PeteMaybe on Twitter. And you can find me at www.PeteMaybe.com. I don't do a whole lot there, but there's going to be some stuff coming up. I'm going to put some videos doing 48-hour film festival next week, so I'll have some videos for them by then. I don't know. That's really all I got going on.
Okay, and we went the whole episode without acknowledging you have a nose ring like an Indian auntie.
Yeah.
So there we go. Now we didn't.
Sorry.
I broke the streak. All right, I am John Papagiorgio. It is inpapasbasement.com, show website. Every episode we have ever done is there. Find us on iTunes, find us on Stitcher, find us on YouTube. Look up Papa's Basement, P-A-P-A apostrophe S. I like making shit confusing to spell, but you get, you get there. It's worth the reward, I like to think. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that's it. Till the next episode, we are out of here.
Let's ride.
We're home free. School's out, baby.
Good show.
Nothing to talk about. Nothing to critique. Great show. Great guest tomorrow. You go home, have a glass of wine, whack off. I'll see you tomorrow.
That's the post-show critique?
Yeah. You're the best.
It's my time to go. I successfully burned all my bridges. Nobody loves me, and I don't love nobody.
Face a penis.
Yeah. Then he said masturbation.
Then he said vagina. That was cool.
Had a mighty hard time, but I'm on my way. Had a mighty hard time, but I'm on my way. It's a mighty hard climb, but I'm on my way.